Welcome to Trapping Radio. This is your host, Clint Locklear. Hope everybody had a great Christmas, got to spend time with your family, maybe got some cool stuff, gave some cool stuff, got to get out in the woods, get some fresh air. Dude, this Christmas for us in the South was brutal. Now, I know you guys up north are going to be laughing at this. Now, keep in mind, I lived in Fairbanks, Alaska for 3 winters. I definitely know what cold is, but we got down to 3 degrees, 25, 30 mile an hour winds. I got my hot tub, my beard froze. Somehow we kept our water going. It was, made me start thinking maybe Florida's looking pretty damn good, to be honest with you. But luckily where we're at, we get cold weather like that. It's only for 2 or 3 days. It lasted maybe 4 days this time. I've heard stories of like 28 people getting killed by this storm up in Buffalo, New York. The snow and the house freezing completely over, and it, wow. So if you didn't get destroyed by this around Christmas, you have something to be grateful for. It's nature is a wild thing, and it doesn't care about us. So just keep those people in mind that's really struggling right now. I've got a sister-in-law that pipes broken her upstairs. It ruined a whole bunch of stuff. And luckily, none of my neighbors around here that I know of had any real issues. But it was just a pretty rough time. Even all the way down in South Georgia, it got down into single digits. So that's our houses aren't set up for it. I guarantee you there's some plumbers right now that's about to be able to afford a Ferrari by the end of the month by how much money they're going to be making. So it's just what it is. I wanted to continue with some of the Eastern Woofer stuff. I got a lot of comments back on that. I was kind of surprised. I didn't know how that would go over because I'm not the best reader, but several comments from that, and I want to continue with that, talking about the East and the West. Before we do, I want to thank our sponsors for Trapping Radio. We have the best sponsors in the country. And I mean that because they're people you can depend on. They're people that'll take care of you. They're people that get your stuff out to you. They're not going to hold your money and keep the product and try to function their business and, you know, sell something else to get you your stuff and all this crazy crap that happens in, any industry. But sometimes it seems to happen a little bit more than ours. And that's not the sponsors I have. So first one is F&T Fur Harvesters. Everything you need for hunting or for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. I've said this before, guys. If you're going to be anywhere up around Michigan, you're looking for something to do, you want to have a day trip or something, F&T has got a cool store that's now retail and open in Alpena. So go check them out. It's From the comments I've heard, guys are really liking it. It's clean, it's nice, it's very well done, and pretty much anything you'd want in the trapping industry is in there. Next sponsor is Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. Jeb's a friend of mine. I've known him for years. He does what he needs to do for his customers. He takes care of his customers. Got a full line of trapping supply stuff. You won't be disappointed if you deal with him. He goes out of his way to make sure that you're taken care of at Oki Cable and Trap. They have Funky Trap Tags and Supplies out of Iowa. Allen, it's hard to say enough good stuff about Allen. He just got, he's got a heart that's too big to be in business. He really does. And if you've ever met Allen, he's a friend for life. And he goes out of his way to help trappers. I think Jeff and Sarah's spending a lot of time with him up there right now, using the fur shed, doing some stuff on skinning lessons and all kind of stuff. Just a super guy. Anything you want in trapping, copper trap tags. He's got some really cool deals on predator calls. He's got all the lures and baits you want. Phenomenal country. Check him out at Hilltop Outdoors. And then we have Dunlap Lures, which is Jeff Dunlap, which is a friend of mine that I'm proud to say that. And he's running around all over the country with Sarah right now and getting back and filling lure orders and all that, which I'm surprised they can do, but they're doing it and they're keeping up with it, which my hat's off to them. He's got really good lure, guys. It's actually really good quality, and it's stuff that catches fur. When you see all the catches that Jeff's making on YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and his DVDs and all that, that's coming from his own stuff. That should tell you all you need to know if you're looking for a new lure to try. That's Dunlap Lures. All right, so we talked a little bit about East and West 2 weeks ago. And because of the comments, I figured we'd continue on. And we talked about, I'm not going to go into all of it, but we just talked about the trap check laws and the differences in East and West and coyote populations and stuff like that. So now we're going to continue on. I feel like Mr. Rogers at a book club right now, so we'll see how this goes. Easy digging. Some would say easy digging and good soil makes it easier on the Western trapper. This gives them an advantage on making sets faster, so they can get in more sets in a day. This is true and it is false. First off, the West is just like the East. It's a really large place. There also has to be a distinction made from Northwest and Southwest and parts of Texas, some of New Mexico and Arizona, do not have some nice ground to work with. I've had areas in Texas and New Mexico that may track me almost too easy. Nice sand, no roots, sure make for a nice day on putting in traps. Right now, I'm in Del Rio, Texas. Just if you didn't know this, guys, I wrote this when I was actually coyote trapping in Texas, the book. And it's not the case. My Pulaski is the only way I can put in a trap bed. The ground is rocky, but the dry ground is so dry and compacted, it's like rock or baked red clay in the south in August. Now, when I was down in Del Rio and I was writing this book, it was actually June, which no human being should be trapping in South Texas in June. I'm just saying. In the mountains in New Mexico at 7,000 to 9,000 feet, the dirt behaved like it was set up concrete. For the most part, the Southwest is easy to work with. If there is any dirt or sand to work with at all, the Northwest also has some nice ground and some ugly ground. There's loose soil, cold shale. The determining factor is the moisture content in the soil. If it is dry and it's been warm, eat your Wheaties and bring a pick. Parts of Nebraska and Dakotas also have nice sand to work with. Now in the East, it's almost the same. Most trappers in the East see in their mind's eye the West has soil conditions that have been blessed from heaven. The fact is that the East is good ground to set still in. Many states in the East have soil-based soil. The Appalachian Mountain Range, most soils are organic mixture of large rocks, shelf rock, and the West has this too. With the exception of summer, most of the East is easy to set in, unless it's frozen, guys. Sure, Eastern trappers take pride in the fact that the weather is in consistent flux. It rains, it's mud, it rains, it sleets, it rains, it snows, it rains, it freezes. Then it thaws everywhere during the winter. There is an exception to this for the most part in the Southwest and the lower elevations in South Texas. There is a reason in the 70s and 80s that as the weather threw a fit, the state hoppers ran to the Southwest. I know the grass is always greener on the other side of the state line, but in reality, every state and climate has positives and negatives. Sure, the Deep South may not have to deal with long periods of deep cold, but most of the winters in the South, you'll have to deal with 35 to 45 inches of rain. Where I live at now, it's 55 inches of rain. And about half of that is in the winter. The North freezes and the South floods. If Mother Nature throws a fit, she will make your life and your trap line suck, no matter where you trap. I'm always amazed that people that don't get to see as much country always think it's easier somewhere else. And it's almost like guys will use that as an excuse of why they're not doing what somebody else is doing. See, when I was in New Mexico and you're trapping where the mesquite was, it was beautiful, beautiful sand. No roots, no rocks, didn't need a shovel. It was like I said, it was almost too easy. Now, 50 miles from there, and you get in really alkaline soil and it looks kind of white. Dude, I don't know how in the world you're going to put a trap in that. You're not going to put it in there with a trapping hammer. You're going to have to use a mattock of some kind to get that in the ground. And it's never going to look right. And it comes out in these great big chunks. And that was in 50 miles of each other. Here in Tennessee, the difference between 5 miles or even sometimes 50 feet is dramatic in the type of soil change. I've been in Pennsylvania giving instruction where some places it's really easy to set and some places you just pull your hair out. That's just a fact of life, guys, you're gonna have to deal with. One of the biggest lessons that I learned from Craig O'Gorman when I took instruction from him is you pick your spots where you have the best dirt. And at first this didn't make sense to me, because if I thought this was the best location, I didn't care what the soil type was. But I watched Craig time after time move off the location, sometimes 20 feet away, and put in sets in these draws and stuff like that, because it allowed the set to work longer, be easier to put in, and easier to blend. There's a lesson there to be learned, no matter if you're in the East or the West. Be smart about what you're putting your sets in, or at least be smart enough to bring some stuff so you can compensate for whatever it is. So if you got really hard, like red clay, or really dried out baked gumbo, and you're going to have to take out a pie plate of solid soil that you're not going to get through a sifter, and the best you're going to hope for is it looks like gravel after you beat it to death, have something else with you that you can replace that with to get your set in. You have to be smart with it. But there's just as many places in the West that it sucks the trap as there is in the East. I think the smarter Western trappers and the smarter Eastern trappers have figured out how to concentrate on places where it's easier for them to trap. So just keep that in mind when you're out there trapping. Sometimes if you're on a travelway, moving up that travelway 50 feet makes a world of difference. Move up 50 feet. Trapping laws. Well, this is a big one between East and West. More so when I wrote the book than now. There's a lot of states that's tightened up because of states like Montana. You got a bunch of granola heads coming in from California, and you got a lot of bleeding hearts coming in from Oregon. And of course, what the liberals do, they're like cockroaches and cancer, and everywhere they go, they try to destroy it just like they did their home planet. So this is not quite the same now as it was when I wrote this book. We've already talked about trap check laws. Again, most of the West will have an advantage over the Eastern trapper. It may be the lack of people. They are closer to reality with the role and destruction of predators. Plus, you can't forget that most of the West is more self-reliant, and the laws on the books reflect it. I don't know if it's just human nature. I don't know if it's the bigger cities get and spill out into suburbs in the rural areas. I don't know, but there seems to be a consistent pattern with trap laws. The more population you get, the more restrictive and stupid trap laws seem to also get. Very rarely, no matter what the problem is with the animals that's trying to be controlled or to be managed in fur trapping, very rarely do those laws actually become more in favor of the trapper. It becomes more in favor of law enforcement giving tickets and restricting trapping and making it more difficult. Now, a permaculture principle is the more rules that are set on a project, the more interesting the project will become. Now, that's the same in trapping. If you've got weird laws you got to work around, that probably means a lot of your competition will not try to work around them. So that may actually give you an advantage over more animals in an area because you've taken the time to think this out, where you can still work the animals but stay within the rules. Most Western states allow coyote trapper to use a coyote trap. So far, most Western boys have not had to be regulated to a coon-sized trap. Some of this is because of the fox men that have never understood that a coyote is not really a big fox. It almost seems that trappers have helped the antis with the sacrifices of the coyote-sized trap to placate some groups or train wrecks in the paper. We will get to traps in a moment. Guys in the West have not bowed down to the restrictions of the cable restraints. Most of the Eastern states have gone to cable restraints or no snaring at all. It would be hard for a man in bad weather to use traps only and still keep coyotes stacked in the truck. Most Western states have longer seasons or no season at all on coyotes or predators. That is the way it should be. Some Eastern states have only a 60-day season. See the advantage that gives somebody? I know this is a trapping book, and most of the West can use M44s, better calling situations, airplanes, gunning from copters. The fact is they have more tools to use to kill more coyotes. See, what a lot of guys don't realize, when you look at some of the older pictures from the 70s and 80s and even the early 90s, and you have these big pictures of fur on the wall from some of these Western guys that are really famous, what you don't know is a certain number of those were shot from a helicopter, shot from airplanes, called in the morning where they knew the dens were at, and a lot of guys were using M44s in cold weather. And then they would also have out traps and snares. But the illusion that that gave an Eastern trapper is, because an Eastern trapper is being a human, you're gonna go, I trap, he traps, he's doing this trapping. That may not be the case. I mean, if you got the budget to go out and slam a bunch of coyotes with helicopters and M44s, you're at a massive advantage just on the pure numbers factors right there, guys. Now, in this country today, everything needs to be fair or people get their feelings hurt. Unfortunately, the West is now getting overran with tree huggers, animal rights millionaires, politically correct politicians, wildlife agencies that don't want anyone but themselves to make money from or manage wildlife. So the West is losing a lot of the advantage they had in regards to their more liberal laws. And I hate to say this, guys, I don't think that's going to stop. I think eventually, I don't think I'll see it in my lifetime, eventually this country will be like Europe, and the only people that can legally set traps are going to be government trappers that really suck at it for the most part. That's what I think trapping's going to be, maybe for your children if they're young, are definitely their children. Just simply because of people are so disconnected from actual nature. There, and I'll give some examples of this. One became very clear. There was a video on Instagram where people were trying to figure out how to do a class action lawsuit against TVA, Tennessee Valley Authority. That's where we get our power. They run the dams on the rivers, the nuclear facilities, and the coal plants. we make so much power in Tennessee off the Tennessee River. We sell it all over the country under contract. Now, when we got down to 3, 4, and 5 degrees for like 3 days, our houses are not set up for that kind of temperature. It'd be really silly for someone to build a house to handle 3 degrees weather like we lived in Maine or, you know, northern Montana or Canada when we don't. You suffer through when it gets cold and you deal with whatever you got to deal with, but you're talking maybe this will happen once every 15 years. And most people in the South have HVAC systems only for heating. Now, our HVAC system, when it gets down below, I think it's 36 degrees, we have propane that kicks on because it's actually more efficient to heat the house with propane than it is electricity, even at propane costs what they are right now. Because when you have a HVAC system that has to use these heat strips, it's like trying to heat your house with a curling iron. Very inefficient. So you got millions of homes all in the South that their systems are going full bore at the most inefficient manner. People are trying to keep their water going. People are trying to heat their houses with their stoves. All kinds of stuff that's burning way extra electricity because no one wants to explain to their kid why they're so cold in their house. So our power grid got strapped. As much power as we make off the Tennessee River, with all the contracts we're selling it to everybody else, TVA had to implement rolling blackouts of 15 minutes. So about 4 times a day, our power would go off for 15 minutes, and I don't know how big of an area it was, so they could move more power to here, take power away from here. Anyway, so everybody gets the same amount of power. And now lawyers are trying to figure out how to sue TVA because of that. People have this weird concept of things should be fair. There's studies that show when they, if you put five monkeys, I've heard Joe Rogan talk about this. You take monkeys and give them bananas. They all get bananas. And then all of a sudden, you give one monkey a birthday cake and don't let the other monkeys have any of it. Those monkeys see the others got something they don't have. And once they get back with the monkey that had something they don't have, they will try to kill that monkey because it wasn't fair. I understand it's like the reptile part of our brain. When you see something or think something's fair, you get very upset about it. That's just life. The advantages of being in the West with the laws may seem unfair. No, you're an American. Move your ass out to the West if you want to take advantage of those. No one's stopping you or making you stay where you're at in the East. It's not fair, it's just different. And the reason it's different is because population and all of the restrictiveness that comes with that population. Now land. Now this is a big one, guys, and this is hard, I think, for Eastern trappers that have never really trapped out west on BLM land to grasp. This can be a big difference between the Eastern and Western trapper. Unfortunately, the East can have way too many people to long line. Also, the tracts of land are for the most part small to medium in size. If you've not trapped in the West before, this will be hard to comprehend. Most far western states have a lot of public BLM land, state land, national forest. In the East, we have farms. In the West, they have ranches. Some single ranches can be about 100,000 acres. The largest I know of is King Ranch in Texas. It's over 800,000 acres and it's private. Sure, there are small tracts of land in the West, but for the most part, the ranchers are several hundred to several thousand acres. Some Indian reservations are 1 million acres, and with the right permits, they will let you trap. Most reservations make their own laws, so they could even give you more freedom. Ed Blue and I were in New Mexico several years back when our catch started to slow down, so we just picked up and found another 1 million acres to go play on. If we would not have liked what we found, we could have just as easily picked another 1 million acres to go trap on. Except for the 24-hour trap check, this was some nice long lining ground. Even with the 24-hour trap check, no gates, easy driving, easy land access, and we could cover over 200 miles a day without killing ourselves. Now to address the land situation most of us eastern trappers have to work with. Most of us work with 50, 100, or 500 acre places. If we're lucky, we'll have 1,000 acres. If you had the luck of the Irish, you may get on some reclaimed mining ground, a hunting club or plantation, and may have several to 10,000 acres. Lucky, but rare. The term access has to be understood when it becomes more important later on. Access is how easy and how much time it takes to get to a piece of property. Not all property is equal. Some properties have many gates to get in and out of. A lot of properties require you to go through other people's property to reach where you have permission, because most of these have small tracts of ground, and because there is so much dead space between permissions, a lot of time is spent on the road going from farm to that farm that is very small to trap the ground. Like I said, in New Mexico, we were running 200 plus miles on 24-hour check. None of our time was wasted from one ranch to the next. We could set up every 10 feet if we wanted to. In the West, the size of the ground is small and the access is usually not very good. In the East. And yet still, most Eastern cowmen want to run lines like they have long tracts of ground. See, the long lining, especially at my age, if you're younger, this may not mean the same to you as it does to me, but when I was young, long liners were like the professional football players. They were the guys that were going out and getting it done. They were the ones writing the books. They were the ones everybody looked up to. They're the ones that all the articles were written about. They're the ones with the big catch pitchers. They were almost like gods with a little G in the trapping industry. And me included, when I was younger, I was trying to replicate long lining because that's what I was reading and that's what the heroes in the trapping industry at the time was advocating. And it doesn't necessarily, for the most part, work for most Eastern trappers to run like that. When we were in New Mexico, I'm trying to think if we ever even had to open a gate. And I don't think so. In Texas, we might be in a fence, but it's 20 to 40 to 60,000 acres with no gates. Compare that to somebody that has to get up in the morning, drive 30 miles to a property, open 4 gates, check 10 traps, open those gates again, come back out to the road, maybe load the four-wheeler, get back on the road, drive 10 minutes somewhere else, go through 6 gates, all that time wasted, and by the time lunch comes, you probably check 40 traps and you used way more energy. Where someone that traps out in the West, they could already run 100 traps by then as fast as they can just drive down the road and slam on the brakes. It does make a huge difference, guys. So what was all this about? The difference between the West and the East. Maybe we Eastern coyote trappers should trap for our area and not for an area 1,500 miles away. Sure, the West has some advantages. Okay, they have more land. The Southwest does have better weather, but for the most part, better laws, less people, better access. So what? The worst thing you can do about these differences is to fall back on them as excuses and reason to stay in a low catch bracket. I admit that when I was in the West, I used every advantage of the law and the land that I could. When I'm in the East, I still take a lot of coyotes, and so can you. This may be hard to swallow and hit some Eastern trappers, but you can catch more coyotes in the East per trap and trap night than most guys in the West. Some things about it, just think about it a moment. In most areas of the West, you have a decent coyote population. You can average two coyotes a day. Some days will be more or less, but two a day is doable. Keep in mind, there are a lot of men that can take 6 to 20 coyotes a day, and this is in the East in good country. This is 60 coyotes in a month, 120 in 60 days. The trapper in the West that traps hard and averages the same two coyotes a day will have 300 for his 5 month season. 300 does sound sexy compared to 120, but is it? Let's not forget the pesky 2 and 3 and 5 day trap checks. If the Western trapper is a hard charger and sets lines every day between checks, his average between checks and the trap nights go way down compared to an Eastern trapper. On a 3 day check, the Eastern trapper will have about 225 traps, 675 nights between catches, and will be on at least three times as much ground. The Eastern trapper will catch the same coyotes with only 75 traps and 75 chances between catches, one third less ground, not before someone in the West gets his or her feelings hurt. This is only a simple, basic breakdown to prove a fact. I've already explained the need for extra traps, trap nights, extra ground being due to lower overall coyote populations. So, if you are this Eastern trapper with 75 traps on a 24-hour trap check with only a 60-day season, you should feel inferior to a Western trapper with 300 traps. I think I should have said you should not feel inferior. I personally see no need for it, but instead of being satisfied with 120 coyotes, why don't we strive to meet the 300 to 500 coyotes in a year and feel just as sexy as the Western trapper? Since there's a difference between the East and the West, let's trap for our area, the East. We have fewer trap nights and sets to work with during that 24 and 30 hour trap check law. Our permissions will not grant us a large amount of access during our entire 24-hour trap check. For the most part, there are more animals that survive the commercial trap line than fall victim to it. We have to work with the 20 to 45 inches of rain or sleet or snow or freezing and thawing in the winter. So let's learn to trap for these facts, not for the factors of the West. It is simply, really, learn to catch more of the coyotes that are on our smaller tracts of ground. Set enough traps to accomplish this. Learn how to make sets for our area. Let's manage our smaller trap lines so they will be more efficient with time, energy, fuel, and expenses. Once you start getting with the program, you will be on your way to becoming a Eastern Wolfer. This is one of the biggest lessons that I can think of, guys, when it comes to guys understanding where they're at. You have to learn how to trap for where you're at. If you're in Wisconsin and you're having to deal with deep snow most of the time, you're going to have to learn to deal with that. Does it seem fair for someone that's in Louisiana not to have the snow? Possibly. But have you ever tried to trap when everything is flooded and you're getting 3 inches of rain a day for 5 days straight? Everywhere's got pluses and minuses. Everywhere. The goal that we're going to be getting into more as we cover this idea of becoming an Eastern Wolfer is, I think the mindset needs to change from trying to cover as much ground as possible, pretty much to say you're covering that much ground. It really needs to start falling down to, how do I catch more coyotes off of the smaller ground to make up for not having as much ground? And it's definitely doable. On all these shows that I've talked about over the years, and I've talked about figuring out ways to set traps in the rain and having to deal with thunderstorms and floods and freezing, thawing and stuff like that, that's the reason I've got away from using dirt around my traps, and I personally use peat moss and grass clippings. That's the reason why. Not saying those can't ever get washed out, but it's more unusual than not if that happens. Because that's the area in which I trap. When you look at a lot of the videos, and it's weird where you're at. Like, I've been with Jeff up in around Alpena, Michigan, and south of there, probably 50, 60 miles. And you have... you're trapping farms and woods and all kinds of stuff. See, that's a very unusual place for me because the sets wise can be very western or they can be very eastern. Here in Tennessee, we don't have that as much. I haven't seen it in Georgia or Alabama or South Carolina or North Carolina. I haven't seen it in Kentucky. I haven't seen it in Missouri. I haven't seen like the weirdness that they have up there. What do I mean by this? You can learn to trap around where Jeff's at up there, more eastern or more western in the same location based off the ground type. You've got places that look very eastern, and you also have these great big sand blows. And you have all of these pits over the years where people have gotten sand and rock, and now there's sand there. So, and a lot of the roads are very sandy, almost like they'd be in the perfect western places, and you can trap for those. But if you come somewhere different, like Kentucky or Mississippi, you're not going to have that. So someone in Mississippi has got to learn how to trap in more, depending on where they're at in their state, more raining, more slick mud. Have to figure out how to be able to get around a trap line and stuff like that, because the ground's not going to be frozen for more than a day or two. You know, I've had times where we had sleeting rain so bad that you couldn't keep snares working. That's just a fact of trapping. But whatever it is where you're at, that should be your goal, is to learn how to trap there. I think part of the reason that Zagger's pipe dream system works so good for him in New York is because he traps a lot of grass, fields. Where if you drop down into middle Pennsylvania, you do have fields, but you're going to be middle western Pennsylvania. You're going to have a lot more woods, trails, four-wheeler roads, logging roads, stuff like that. maybe that system wouldn't be as functional as it is up in New York. You've got to figure that out as the trapper. That's your job. And you're going to have to be creative sometimes. I was just talking on the phone with a gentleman, and he was having some issues with coyotes. And just the concept of him putting grass and not putting dirt around his trap was you could tell that was a very different way of thinking. He's thought about it, but because he hasn't done it and he hasn't seen a whole lot of people talk about it or seen it in whatever the information is that he's getting, it gets very confusing. I'm not going to mention the name of the DVDs, but I remember watching these years ago. And you had guys that trapped in the East and West, and they were trying to force Western sets in the East inside, and it looked like a three-year-old had done it. And I guarantee you, their coyote catch in the East was not very high because it was so unnatural. Where if you take that same person with that same set and you stick them in the high desert of New Mexico where I was trapping, it would work slick as a drum. So when you're out trapping and you're looking around and you're trying to use methods, you need to be consciously thinking, guys, is this the easiest and less energy and the most efficient way that I can trap for where I'm at? A good example of this, and of course we've been talking coyotes, but I'm going to switch it up a little bit. When we moved to Dunlap, which is the Appalachian Mountains, and I was spending most of my time out at Longline and Coon on the road in West Tennessee and Beaver. It's more Midwestern-like. It's flatter. You've got a lot of good, high organic, sand-based soil on the creeks. And I could punch in pockets and, you know, I could do all the stuff that I was seeing from all these coon killers up in the Midwest. And it did good. But when I started trapping around Dunlap, that didn't fly. And if I'm not mistaken, I'm trying to think in my mind's eye, I think it took me about two seasons to figure out this was stupid for me to be doing where I lived at. There were two reasons why my coon trapping was very frustrating when I was in Dunlap. One, our water for the most part is crystal clear over there, like bathtub water. If you've ever watched my videos on YouTube, it looks like we're in the Caribbean when I'm going down a lot of these places in a boat, or if you see me trapping along the bank, the water looks blue-green, almost turquoise color. It's clear as clear can be. The other thing about what was going on is everything was rocky. Have you ever tried to put a pocket set into rock? It didn't work very well. I'm like, you know, trying to slam in pockets. I'm pulling rocks to the side. I'm trying to get a shovel in there. Nothing but frustration. And if I found somewhere that wasn't rocky, it's where the sandbar and the water current has pushed up a bunch of sand and organic material and leaves. And it kind of felt like I was doing the more traditional Midwestern coon trapping. Except you could not keep a pocket set from collapsing on itself for anything. It got to the point where I was so dedicated to what I thought was the right way to catch raccoons at the time. Keep in mind, this is way before dog proofs and we could not use body grips on dry land. So it was footholds and it was snares. It got so frustrating that I started getting everybody's those little green pots like your wife gets flowers in. They're about 6 inches round, 6 inches deep. I started carrying those so I could force pockets into places where nature was saying, hey, dummy, stop doing this. I forced a way to put a pocket in. Didn't need to put a pocket in, but I thought that was the right way to go. That clear water I was talking about, you take a black trap and put it in a half inch of water up next to a hole and watch what happens when a raccoon comes down the creek. Now, the raccoon doesn't know it's a trap, but he knows it's something, and he starts piddling with the dang things. If I had out, say, 50 pocket sets in that type of situation, in that clear water with a black trap, half of them would just be thrown out of the bed with no coon. Most of them not even set off. Coon's coming down the creek, he's got his hands in the water, he sees this thing that's obvious to a blind coon, starts piddling around with it, starts smelling the bait that's in the hole, just throws the thing out of the way and gets my bait. 2 seasons for me to figure out this was stupid. Now when I went out to Iowa to trap coon, I could go back to the pockets. And I remember watching Gerald Smith when he came out with his video where he caught something like 700 mink in pockets. I was dumbfounded that he could find 700 places to put pockets. Now, if I was going to try to be a big mink trapper and I was going to emulate Gerald Smith procedure from Minnesota, in the Rocky Mountain, in the Rocky Appalachian Mountains of Tennessee, can you not see how frustrating and unproductive that would be? I had to figure out how to catch them where I was at. And my answer was simply bed 1.5s and number 2s in the coon trails along the creek and cover them with grass. I got to playing around with like the different stepping sticks ideas and stuff like that, smearing lure on a tree, putting the trap in the middle of the trail. I found ways to be very productive catching coon that was not anything what I thought it was supposed to be or when I went and saw a coon demo at the NTA. Now that's a very exaggerated example, guys. But I guarantee you, a lot of you that are listening to me right now are forcing sets and concepts and trapping systems into your area that does not match your area. And you're getting frustrated, and you're getting aggravated, and you're not catching what you think you should be catching because you're not trapping for the area that you're at. If I want to go out here in Tennessee and catch a bunch of coyotes because of our laws and our vegetation, I'm probably going to be running 60 to 70% snares. A couple of years ago, we had an NTA in Iowa, which would have been northwest part of the state, with these humongous fields, no cover, very little trees, And if I tried to force my system that works really good here to out there, I'd have been pulling my hair out with frustration. So if you're a dirt hole trapper that goes out early season and pounds in a bunch of these little dirt holes, and later in the season you get invited or you figure out a way to go to, say, Mississippi or Louisiana, and you think you're going to do the same thing and catch all these coyotes and cats, with that much rain, oh, you're going to be pulling your hair out, brother. I know of guys that have caught several hundred to probably 500, 600, 800 beaver in a year in the North Midwest. Comes down to Mississippi and Louisiana where there's beaver on top of beaver and gets their ass kicked. And when you kind of figure out and talk to them and ask why, they were using a system that worked very well on their beaver that southern beaver just did not care about. Northern beaver, certain times of the year, go absolutely crazy over beaver lure. And you just, what they're doing is they're just throwing, putting a 330 in the water, half in, half out of the water, and they throw some beaver lure behind it, and because the beaver are so aggressive on that beaver lure up north, they're smacking beaver left and right. You bring them down to the south, nope. They get humiliated and frustrated. Now, my bigger question, and I didn't want to cause a fight, my bigger question was, when you saw your system wasn't working for where you was at, why didn't you change it? But I kind of know the reason. People, once they believe in something, no matter what the facts are showing them on the ground in a different situation, they will keep going back to what they believed in because they believe it's right. And it's right where you were from, but it's not right where you're at right now. If you were to talk to older beaver trappers, which I have, that were catching 600, 700 beaver a year during the fur boom, not beaver, coon, in the fur boom, they would look at you very confusingly if you brought up coon bait or coon lure. Now, there's some exceptions to this, but most of the trappers that slammed coon in the south never use bait or lure. They blindsided them in the water or they blindsided them in a trail. Now, I know there's going to be a lot of you northern guys that's going to go somewhere in the deep south somewhere because that's, you know, you're getting snowed out and you're tired of being cold and you're, you know, all that. So you go somewhere. And you run down to the dirty deep south with a bunch of dog-proof traps because they work really good for your coon up north all year round because those coon have to put on a tremendous amount of fat to survive, and those raccoons will eat anything, and they will aggressively do it. So you come down south where raccoons are never hungry, and they don't have to put on a lot of body fat, and they don't pay as much attention to bait and lure, which means they're not going to play with your dog proofs as much. And you're going to be seeing these coon tracks all over the place in an empty dog proof trap. I've talked to hundreds of trappers that this has happened to. Because I've used dog proof traps in northern areas and I've used them in the south. It is not the same. And it doesn't matter which trap you're using. It is not the same. I could go on and on about things that work in certain areas for certain reasons that don't work in other areas. If you want to become a next caliber trapper, whatever that is for you, you have to think. And you have to notice. And whatever your bias is on what should work when it doesn't work, you figure something else out. Biases are strong. If someone, especially younger, has only used dog-proof traps, say in New York, and they catch 200 or 300 coons a year, and they've got a good catch ratio, and you come down to Arkansas using the same thing, you better be able to switch on a dime and figure something else out. And it's no different for coon. The only animal that I can think, oh, there's a couple, that doesn't seem to have that big a drastic anything going on. Bobcats and fox. Those animals seem to be pretty much standard on whatever you're doing, as long as they can function in the weather, over a lot of other animals. Pretty much every other animal, you better be paying attention to where you're at. Mink here in the South, yes, they are usually next to water, but they're not as much water animals as they are up north. So if you're trying to catch every mink in the water in the South, it's going to be a little frustrating. I mean, I don't know anything about fishers. I don't know anything about weasels. I don't know anything about those. But the animals I do know about, from traveling as much as I've traveled and as much country as I've seen and as much country as I've trapped in, there's normally things that you have to figure out when you get there. And if you learned a system from somebody that's there and it's not quite working out where you're at, you're going to have to learn how to tweak it. You're going to have to learn how to change it. You're going to have to learn how to throw it away. Whatever it is. The biggest lesson for here is, I think, from doing what we did today, you have to, as a trapper, learn how to trap for where you're at. And this nonsense of a coyote is a coyote, a set's a set, all that stuff, that's for very basic, a very basic trapping mindset that it's probably not going to take you very far. So just think about this. When you're out trapping and stuff isn't working, start using your head and going, why is it not working? I got coyotes coming to the set, but they're not stepping on my trap. Well, why aren't you moving the trap around? Why aren't you taking pictures of all the tracks on your phone where you can look at them back to back so you can see a pattern of maybe you got your trap too close, maybe it's too far, maybe it's too much to the side, whatever it is. So you can switch up what you're doing to actually start catching more fur. If you do that, you'll be a much better trapper as you go on. And the more you problem solve on a trap line, the easier the problems are to solve. So y'all go out there and you get it done. Y'all have a good time and enjoy what time we have left of the season. And I'll talk to y'all later.